Well, our guest today is an expert on tickling the amygdala, and his copy reads, quote, "The latest brain science and brain imaging has proven that thought really is the most incredible mind over gray matter," close quote. Neil Slade teaches people how to easily release their brain's pre-existing neural circuits for high increases in creativity, intelligence, pleasure, as well as numerous paranormal abilities. Previously at the Dormant Brain Research and Development Laboratory, he is also well known for his brain music, which has appeared nationally and on PBS television. Neil is a teacher, musical composer, seasoned concert performer, author, and artist. He was assistant to brain and behavioral researcher TDA Lingo for 11 years at Colorado's Dormant Brain Research and Development Laboratory. He is a regular guest on Coast to Coast and has been billed as the Timothy Leary of the new millennium. However, Neil is confident that unlike drugs, amygdala stimulation, once learned, produces better and stronger results over time without any of the negative side effects. Well, let's find out more about that, so let's get him in here. Welcome to Provocative Enlightenment, Mr. Neil Slade.
Hi, how are you doing, Elvis?
I am doing great, sir. I've been looking forward to chatting to you. I love your book. I love how you've written it. You know, it is a completely unique and unusual form, but you really get the point. Still, to begin with, please tell us about how you found your way into this work and about your early experiences with the legendary, albeit controversial, TD Lingo.
Boy, that's a long story. Well, let's see. I had gotten my degree in music education out of college, and I was kind of searching around. I tried teaching in the public schools, and that lasted for about one semester before I realized that would drive me crazy. I wasn't a elementary school or high school teacher at heart, and I began teaching. I had my own music school that I started, and one day I was watching PBS television, and I saw this very odd documentary, and it was about a fellow who ran a It was basically a behavior modification laboratory in the wilderness in Colorado, and that was TD Lingo that you're speaking of. And previously, he had his own NBC television show. He was also a singer-songwriter, gotten in on the folk song thing. Mm-hmm. He did that for a short time, made a lot of money very quickly, and then went back to his first love, which was science and psychology. And he began an experimental laboratory up in Colorado where people would come, and during the summer they would take this brain in nature course, and they would delve in to neurology and yoga and meditation, and also, you know, standard psycho analysis types of activities. And so he did that for a number of decades. And I saw him on this show, and I said, oh, that looks pretty interesting. People were talking about paranormal experiences as well as increased creativity. And that's how I kind of hooked up with him and stayed with him for about 11 years as his assistant. So that's basically how I got into the brain sciences.
You know, now, he, like I indicated, he's somewhat of a controversial figure, and he often fails to receive the credit he deserves. What do you think that is?
Well, he was a kind of a renegade in that he was getting his PhD at the University of Chicago, and he had gone through the horrors of World War II, and he wanted to know what was that mental state about where people were in constant conflict, which, you know, ended up as being nations warring against each other. So he asked his professor. He said, "Why must I kill my brother in war?" And his professor said, "Well, we don't know exactly the answer to that question, but if there is an answer, it's in between your two ears in that gray matter. And if you want to figure that out, you can stay in the university and go slow, or you can start your own laboratory and go fast." And he decided he would drop out of the more traditional academic world and begin his own research. And so he was a renegade at the very beginning. And he incorporated all kinds of disciplines into the work that he did. So as I mentioned before, he touched upon yoga, he touched upon meditation, Eastern philosophy, hypnosis, as well as understanding neurophysiology from a more academic standpoint. And his main focus was this organ called the amygdala, which is a central emotional hub that's located in the midbrain. And so he focused on how, you know, what that amygdala did and what were the advantages if one could self-control how that amygdala worked. And that was basically what his work was for 35 years.
Right.
And so I took on, he died in 1993, and I, in a way, I became an heir to his work, and I continued his educational part of his program from that time, and went into writing my books, and then did some more additional, you know, research in that area myself. But he was just, he was outside the mainstream, and that's why he was controversial. But as it turns out, as we look back, if we go back to what the observations that he made and look at his theories and hypotheses, they've all been proven by the more traditional academic scientists. In terms of, it was very interesting in your introduction because you were describing the amygdala and what the more, I would say, conventional wisdom of the function of this part of the brain was. And there's a great deal of misconceptions, and it's easy to get wrong information about what this part of the brain does. And I could pick up a few of those little tidbits there in your description. So it's,
well, that's good. You know, that's my very next question. You heard the setup piece.
Yeah.
Should we worry that tickling our amygdala is somehow going to trigger fear or sexual lust or, you know, emotions that we tend to believe cortical inhibition needs to be in control of?
Well, here's the first thing. The amygdala is just not a fear button. And this is one of the main misconceptions about this part of your brain.
Right.
The amygdala is really a compass, as it were. It's an emotional compass. And it will not only trigger fight or flight types of responses, it not only will elicit fear, but it also does exactly the opposite depending upon what type of sensory information is coming in. So not only is it a fear button, but that's only half the story. The other half of the story is it's a pleasure button. The amygdala is also responsible for reward as well as punishment. And the idea of tickling your amygdala is to tap into, to understand why the brain would give you reward in some circumstances, and at the other hand, give you fear and painful types of negative emotions on the other hand. And as soon as you understand that the amygdala is a compass, that it's nature's way of guiding you towards increased survival and towards more efficient types of behavior and positive experience, once you realize that it's both it can click in both directions, then you really have an understanding of how the human brain is a wonderful tool to help you get where you want to go in life, or whatever that happens to be.
I want to pick up on that in just a minute, because that's an important, I mean, that is, for all intent and purposes, the underlying thesis behind your work.
Yeah.
But before we do, you know, the Timothy Leary...
That could be good or bad, depending on what your attitude is.
Yeah. Okay. So how does the tickling of the amygdala then differ by way of experience from the use of drugs?
Okay. Well, drugs typically, drugs is a very big category. There's drugs.
Call on psychedelics. Take that on.
Yeah. You can talk about opiates, which are painkillers. You can talk about marijuana. You can talk about drugs is a very big subject. Now, when you talk about Timothy Leary, he was saying turn on, tune in, drop out. That one drug in particular that he focused on, LSD, if you take that, that will expand your consciousness and then lead you towards fulfillment. Okay? Now, the problem with any drug, whether it be LSD or cocaine or marijuana, is you typically have a withdrawal. In other words, you get high, and then the drug wears off. And very often, what happens is you get sort of a negative rebound. You get a crash after you get the high, right?
Right.
You know, it's very noticeable with alcohol, for example. You get a high from alcohol, but then you get the hangover later on. So all substances that you use, whether they have a real positive effect or negative effect, they're going to have this kind of letdown after it wears off. And the difference between amygdala, brain self-stimulation, is that you don't get that negative withdrawal reality hangover after it works out. The brain and its own brain chemicals, which are far more potent than even heroin or cocaine, the chemicals that are inside your brain don't give you that withdrawal and that hangover, reality hangover later on. So it's kind of a natural way to tap into this the feel-good neural connections in your brain without all the negative side effects. So if you can tap into that by self-stimulating certain areas of your brain, you're going to be on a really positive road, as opposed to, you know, running out of this drug or that drug or not having enough money to buy whatever substance
right,
you want to get.
Right. But so, okay, now I've learned to tickle my amygdala. I am feeling great. It is fantastic. Am I addicted? And is there any problem if I am?
No, there really isn't. It's, you know, and what you've said is you've learned very simply what that is. You know, just by concentrating on a specific region in your brain, it's free. It doesn't cost you anything to do it. And Eldon, I'm sure you didn't feel any kind of negative rebound after you did that. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
it's like eating. You know, you it's like when you have a good meal, you eat, you feel great, your hunger has been satiated, and then later on, when you feel hungry again, you eat some more food. And tickling your amygdala is the same thing. It's not something that you wouldn't just sit around and tickle your amygdala all day long. It's more as if it's turning the key in your car. Your amygdala is it's a catalyst that actually allows more energy and activity to occur in the most advanced part of your brain, the frontal lobes, as it were. All the human things that you do, all the creativity, all of the compassionate activities that you do, all of the interpersonal relationships that you have that are positive are a result of using the most advanced part of your brain, which is your frontal lobes. And your frontal lobes are, for the most part, everyone, they're greatly underused. So the way to turn on this advanced part of your brain is through this little key switch, this compass, the amygdala. And the amygdala can be activated by just reacting to what's out there in the world, where you're not conscious of this amygdala switch, okay? The problem with that is there's a lot of negative types of things that you run into just in your daily activity. So the amygdala will click forward into positive brain activity, but in some instances it'll, because of what's out there, what happens to happen, it'll also click backward. So you're kind of going forward, and then you're going backward, and then you're going into positive experience, and then going into negative experience. It's kind of on, off all the time. Now, once you learn that you've got an amygdala, what you can do is you can tickle it forward so it tends to be more in that positive brain activity experience. And instead of your brain reacting to just what happens to be out there, including all the negative stuff out there, you become the driver of your brain mobile, as it were.
And like
so
that
you can reduce the amount of negative, reactive computations that your brain does.
You know, of course, here at Hay House, we talk a lot about personal empowerment, how individuals can become more positive, how they can be proactive in their lives, how they can have successful relationships, and da 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 da. And I really mean that. I mean, that is, we could go on for more than an hour with a list of the kinds of things that you're going to hear at Hay House Radio. every single human being that hears any of that information has an amygdala. An amygdala, I'll get that said. And it would occur to me that since this is the switch, that if in any way I wanted to improve my life, the quality of my life, including that component we call health and wellness or longevity, I would be well served to turn this switch on, to learn how to turn this switch on. Would you concur with that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and when you said there's a lot of different things out there, I mean, there are millions of self-help, self-improvement techniques out there.
Right.
And not to discount those, but a lot, you know, anybody can come along and say, hey, follow me. I am the way. I now have this new thing that I'm going to tell you how to do. And if you do that, then that's going to solve all of your problems, right? How many
right.
times we've heard that? And anybody can say that. But science is a little bit different because it says, okay, let's look at the reality of the physical universe, okay? You know, let us study very carefully and understand what science is. Everyone, as you said, has an amygdala. Everyone has the brain. When you understand that the brain has certain functions that don't have anything to do with what your faith is or what your religion is or what you believe, we're talking about something, the amygdala and its functions and the way the brain works is sort of like gravity. It's something that's obvious, that's incontrovertible, and it's not based upon somebody. You know, people lie, Eldon, you know that. Everyone knows that. So how do you know what is real? And if you look at the function of the brain, everyone's got a brain. Most everyone has an amygdala. We know how the brain works at a certain level, and we can say with absolute certainty that if you use your brain in a certain way, it's going to respond in a certain way. You can look at people's thoughts now using a brain scanning machine, and you can say, well, if I listen to this type of music, for example, or I have this type of thought, we can actually see how the brain is reacting in that circumstances.
So, you're absolutely right. I'm gonna have to hold you right there, Neil, because
sure.
we've got a hard break coming up. But speaking of music, when we come back, I'm going to ask you about that. Indeed, I've got a sample of some of your music, and we'll play a short piece, because there are a number of ways to turn on the amygdala. The bottom line is you have physical equipment. If you want to walk, you need to empower your legs. If for all intent and purposes you want to accomplish some things in life, the amygdala switch is a way to do it. We're speaking with Neil Slade about his work and book, great book, Tickle Your Amygdala. I don't know. If you're not already in our chat room, now's a great time to join the conversation. We have a short movie of our guest there, so be sure and take a look. We'll be right back after a few words from some of our friends. Welcome back. If you just joined us, we're speaking with Mr. Neil Slade about his book, Tickle Your Amygdala. If you haven't bought a book this year and you're only going to buy one, buy this book. All right, Neil, what are we listening to and what am I supposed to experience?
Well, first of all, I have to say, you know, when you said if you only buy one book this year, buy Tickle Your Amygdala, and I was wonderful to hear you say that, because that's a book that I had spent a lot of time on, and I spoke with, I think it was 52 or 54 people from all over the world who were experts in their field. And I wanted to ask them how you tickle your amygdala. And I spoke with people like Josh Blue, who was the winner of Last Comic Standing, and Terry Jones from Monty Python. I spoke with UFO experts. I spoke with anthropologists and so on and so forth. So it's a very comprehensive book. But it really shows, you know, that everyone uses their brain in their own unique way, and that there's nothing between you and your brain. So if you really want to know the truth about your experience and the way that you experience the world, go directly to your brain. See what your brain is telling you. You don't have to believe this person. You don't have to believe this other person. You don't have to pay somebody for their advice over here or subscribe to this. It's all within your brain, and the brain is a wonderful infinity machine. So I've got to thank you for that endorsement.
Well, you're more than welcome. And everybody that listens to this show knows how much emphasis I put on the operation of the equipment we call our physiology, you know, and how little time we spend actually learning to use that physiology to its highest best. So to me, your book is an instruction manual. And, you know, everybody out there is equipped with this physiology we call a body, you know, a brain body or what, however you want to see it. And we should all be aware of how it operates and what we can do to maximize it. And of course, you know, tickling your amygdala is not the end all be all, but it is, as you already pointed out, it is an ignition. It is a compass. It is a direction. It is something that every single human being can do that will replace a whole lot of sedatives, a whole lot of narcotics, a whole lot of other drugs that are passed out for a number of clinical situations, you know, like anxiety and depression. But it also has some magic that has to do with pure cognitive skills. And I want to go to that direction, but I'm going to bring you back.
Okay.
The music. What's the power of this music? How are you popping my lobes when I listen to this music?
Well, music is a very big subject, and I'm actually a trained, university-trained musician. I've been playing music since I was 5 years old, and I just happened to get into the brain stuff because I wanted to become a better musician. I thought, okay, well, if I know how my brain works, it'll help me to operate my musical ability better, because that's all coming from the brain, as it were. Often you hear people say, well, you're not your brain, but you are your brain too. I certainly acknowledge that we have a soul, that we have a spirit, but in this incarnation, you know, we've got a body and we've got a brain. Now, everyone knows how to drive their car, right? Everyone knows where the gas pedal is, what the steering, where you put the gas, how much pressure, you know. You learn how your car operates, and it allows you to get from one side of town to the other. When we're growing up, we learn about physical education. We learn about diet. We learn what foods to eat, what foods not to eat, hopefully, right? We learn math. We learn how to read. But so few of us have been taught or encouraged to learn about our mind motor. And that's the one thing in your body that, you know, you can get an artificial heart, you can get a kidney transplant, you can get a liver transplant, you can get artificial limbs, but the brain is the one thing that if you change your brain, you're no longer you, right? So let's spend a little bit of time in each one of our lives to look at this most important part of our body and say, well, how does that work? What's the amygdala? What's the frontal lobes? What's a frontal lobe? So I'm just encouraging people, hey, you know, spend an hour, spend a day, look at your brain, and when you learn how your brain operates, you're going to have this incredible tool that you know so much more about, and instead of, you know, ending up in places where you don't want to be, once you learn how the brain works and how to self-control the brain, you're going to find that your road is much smoother. It's like, you know, it would be the difference between if you'd never driven a car before, somebody gives you a keys and say, okay, here's the keys, go. Can you imagine that? But this is what people are doing in their lives. They say, okay, you've got a brain, go. But what you need to do is read the driver's manual to your brain. So I've tried to write these books that are, in essence, driver's manual. Now, back to your question, because it's easy for me to get off topic here. Music. Music is one of the most powerful ways that we can use to help guide our brain. and to make our brain work better. And I taught music for 30 years, even while I was doing all of my brain research and brain work. So the one, I was surprised to hear you play that one piece. That piece was written by a 13-year-old music student of mine and sung by a couple of 15-year-old music students. These were kids who had learned what they could do with their brain. And so that album that song came from, the Amygdala Brain Bites album, was done with a couple of teenagers just kind of expressing themselves with their newly discovered brain power, as it were. So it was a kind of a team effort. Music is just a fantastically powerful tool, and I explain in Tickle Your Amygdala and my other books, and, you know, I freely talk about also that music is such a powerful and can be such a powerful force, you know, if you recognize it as such. And it's very important to understand that the type of music that you listen to can have such a profound effect on the way that your brain operates and consequently the way that your life operates.
Right. Now, you know, there's a lot of research. In fact, it's not new. I mean, some of it is probably 25, 30 years old now, that demonstrates classical music, particularly adagio, largo, enhances the learning environment. And, mm-hmm. you know, our Language Learning Institute in Bethesda teaches foreign languages to our intelligence people in very short periods of time, 30 to 90 days, you know, employing this kind of technology,
sure,
the so-called Lozenov method, accelerated learning and suggestopedia, et cetera, several labels that it goes by. But there's also research that, showing us that individuals who, for all intent and purposes, in normal operation, are unaware of who they are, have very little memory or abbreviated access to memory, suddenly when certain music is played to them, they recall who they are. They recall life events. They suddenly, if you will, wake up. I think just about everybody knows that music affects your moods. And one of the reasons I chose this particular one, Neil, is, you know, it is light, it is up, it is airy, it just kind of feels good, you know? And that, I think, is what part of what you try to do with all of your music at your website. Correct me if I'm wrong, and share with us where your website is.
This website you can get to very easily. Just go to brainradar.com. And it's a very big website, so I've got areas that are devoted to music, I've got areas that are devoted to neurophysiology, I've got some fun pages, I've got a library in there, I'm kind of an eclectic type of person. I do a lot of different things, so whatever mood strikes me, I'll do an article. Right now I'm doing a radio show called The Book of Wands, and it incorporates music, incorporates story, and that you can get to that by, there's a little radio, if you click on the radio at my main website. So brainradar.com is like a big candy store. And if you've never been to that site, just go in there and just have fun. Just explore, and you'll find paths go here and other paths go there and so on and so forth. The thing about music is that all of the decades that I've been a professional musician as well as been into brain research, my conclusion is that there's no one specific type of music that's going to do the right thing for you all of the time. What you have to do is determine how music makes you feel at any given moment and be open to the idea that music is like food. Sometimes you're going to want an apple. Sometimes you're going to want a tofu hot dog. Sometimes you're just going to want to drink a glass of water. And each of those types of foods will supply nutrients to your body. Well, music is the same way. If you're aware of that, people will often listen to music just out of habit, unconsciously, and it might be the wrong kind of music for you at that point in time. That would be like somebody who is just on a constant diet of Twinkies and French fries, okay? Sometimes you're going to want to listen to a certain type of music because your brain needs a certain type of musical nutrition. Other times your brain's going to crave and want another type. And if you're just reacting, if you just automatically click on the radio because that's the station that's on, you may not be getting the right type of musical nutrition, as it were, right? So as you become aware of music as food and nutrition, you become much more discriminating about the type of music that you listen to, and you become aware of the effect that that music is having on you. Do you follow?
I follow. I remember some research years ago where dairy cattle were played different kinds of music. So were chickens, and there was music. You can think of it as easy listening music, where the chickens laid well and the cows gave milk, and then dissonant sounds were played, and the milk quantity, the milk production reduced, and as did the egg laying. So, all right, now there's an association between tickling the amygdala and increasing our general sense of well-being as well as cognitive skills. So you've given us one way. One pathway is music. But there are a number of other ways that you discuss in your book. One of them is imagination. You flesh out for us this whole idea of using this invisible, you know, feather to tickle the amygdala, and give us some other ideas as to how we might, you know, excite, get our compass going the right direction.
Okay. Well, Dr. Richard Restak has provided us with a very, very simple model of the brain. He says you can divide the brain into half. He said one half we call the automatic reactive brain. And that's when your brain just automatically functions and reacts with the universe. You don't have control. For example, if you put your finger near a hot stove, you'll just pull your hand back. It just automatically reacts. If you see somebody walking down the street and they've got a frown on their face and they're holding a big stick, you don't think about that too much. You just automatically react. Probably just run in the opposite direction, right? So that's the reactive part of the human brain. And if we think about our daily experience and we live through our daily experience, we can observe when we are just using that automatic reactive part of our brain. And it's very good that we have an automatic reactive part of our brain. It helps us to survive. But it's not enough to lead a full, positive life. Restak then says we've got this other half of our brain, and that's the reflective part of our brain. That's the part, that's the controlling part. That's the part of our brain in which we can choose one course over another, that we can think about the consequences of our action, okay? So we've got a reactive brain, and then we've got a reflective brain. And what the amygdala does is it helps us to click into that more reflective part of our brain, which happens to be the most advanced part of our brain. And it's the part of our brain that has the most potential, and it's the best problem-solving part of our brain. The reactive brain can only solve problems very short-term. It can only see 2 inches in front of your nose. On the other hand, the reflective part of our brain, which neurophysiology tells us is the frontal lobe, it's the front part of our brain, that allows us to solve problems for the long term. In other words, the reflective part of our brain can allow us to solve problems that allows us to survive over a long period of time, not just react momentarily. Now, the amygdala gives us positive reinforcement. It makes us feel good when we use more of that reflective part of our brain. When we're clicked backward into the reactive part of our brain, we tend to have negative emotional experience. We tend to feel bad. So positive is reflective. Negative tends to be reactive. And the idea here is by tickling your amygdala, you can turn on more of that reflective part of your brain and turn on more of the potential and the more advanced circuits of your brain. And you can do that consciously instead of just going through your daily experience reacting to this, reacting to that like a machine. You're not a machine, but you're not a machine provided that you use that reflective advanced part of your brain and understanding that the amygdala is giving you emotional signals to tell you that you're either just reacting or that you're using the more advanced, unlimited potential of your brain. I'm not sure if I answered your question.
No, you didn't, and I will bring you back to it, but that's okay. You did go a direction that I think is relevant. You know, conditions such as anxiety, autism, depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, even phobias are often suspected of being linked to abnormal functioning of the amygdala.
Yeah.
Sometimes owing to damage or developmental problems or neurotransmitter imbalances. Let me ask you this. By tickling the amygdala, Your experience, can one improve these conditions?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it has to do, again, with turning on the potential of the brain. When you talk about traumatic experiences, when you talk about negative emotions, what you're really doing is reacting to your external environment or often to memories that may be stored in your brain. You're just automatically engaged in kind of a an automatic circuit. And the idea here is that you don't have to just react to memories. You don't have to just react to the environment. You can use brain self-control and get in there and turn that dial and turn the direction that you're facing, as it were. That you don't have to be the victim of circumstances or the victim of memories, that you can get in there and you can actually steer that brain mobile in the direction that you want to go. That's the first thing to realize, is that if you understand how your brain is working, you can say, oh, you mean I don't have to go this direction? I can change the direction? And so that's why the amygdala and understanding some brain basics is so important.
It's a steering mechanism, no doubt. Now, do this. Give us one exercise that our listening audience can do to tickle their amygdala. I know there are many in the book, and I know they differ for different people, but give us one exercise.
Okay, and now I remember what you talked about imagination and how important that was. And the reason that imagination is important is because imagination occurs in the most advanced part of your brain. Imagination is a frontal lobes process. It occurs in the front of your brain. When you react, when you have no imagination, then you're just using this more primitive reactive part of your brain. So whenever you engage imagination, it's like you turn the key in the ignition and you say to your brain, okay, I'm going to imagine something, click, and the motor starts. And all of a sudden, instead of you sitting in the curb and you're not going anywhere, by using your imagination, you turn the key and you turn on the most advanced part of your brain. And when advanced part of your brain, excuse me. And when you do that, then all of a sudden, all of your options open up. You're not just reacting. So the simplest way to tickle your amygdala, let me explain to people. You have two amygdala, and they're located 1 inch inside each temple, okay? And the amygdala is the central emotional hub of your brain. So if it's clicked backwards, if the amygdala is circuiting backwards, you have negative emotional feedback. You feel bad. You feel painful emotions. You feel physical pain. If your amygdala is tickled forward, it's sending electrical activity into the frontal lobe, and the brain wants you to do this, so it rewards you with pleasure and positive emotions and positive things. So you don't have to be the victim. You can actually start to tickle the amygdala and turn on the positive emotions and advanced thoughts simply by using your imagination. That's because
if you turn on your imagination, you're turning on your frontal lobes where all the goodies are, okay? So if you can, imagine that you've got two amygdala buttons. They're about the size of the tip of your thumb. Each one is located 1 inch inside your temple, kind of midway between the back of your eyeball and your inner ear. You've got one in the left hemisphere of your brain, one in your right hemisphere. You've got twin amygdalas, okay? Imagine you have a feather, just any kind of feather. Maybe it could be a sparrow feather. Maybe it could be a big ostrich feather. I've got a big purple ostrich feather in my car to remind me to tickle my amygdala. And if you close your eyes, you can pretend that you've got this feather in your hand, and you can take the tip of that feather and very lightly touch the front part of your right amygdala and just go tickle, 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 tickle. Right,
right. I'm tickling mine right now, and yeah, we are
smiling
out
and
of time.
That absolutely that you laugh and think that it's funny proves
we're out of time, Neil. I'm sorry. Wonderful, everybody out there, tickle your amygdala. That website again, remember, is brainradar.com.